This week's Parsha is Parsha Vayetze, and we will start from the beginning, page 144. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Shava Vayelech Charano. Yaakov went out from Be'er Shava and he went to Charan. Yaakov right now was told by his parents to go to his uncle Laban to find a wife. He has just taken away the brachas from his brother Esav, who wanted to kill him. And he is now finding himself leaving Be'er Sheva, where his parents were living. He's going to Haran, to where his uncle Laban is. So there is a medrash in this week's parsha that says like this. It brings down the pasuk from Tehillim. Mishil amalos esa einai el haharim. I lift up my eyes to the mountains. And the Medrash says we change the punctuation of the word haharim, and we change it to hahorim, which means parents. And this pasuk is being used to express the feelings of Yaakov. Esa einai el haharim. I look to my parents. I look to my predecessors to teach me and show me what to do. May I in Yavai Ezri, from where will my aid, from where will my assistance come from? Yaakov says, Eliezer, who went to look for a wife for Yitzchak, Shahala Bashar Shalach Lavi Es Rivka, when he went to bring Rivka, Maksiv Bey, what does the Torah write about Eliezer? It says, "Va'ikach ha'eved asar gemalim." The eved took 10 camels laden with goodies. Ani loy nezem echad v'loy tzamid echad. I don't have one nose ring. I don't have one bracelet. So Yaakov is expressing, "May I in Yavai Ezri, from where is my help going to come? Because looking at my predecessors, looking at what my grandfather did when he had to get a wife for Yitzchak, he knew that to get a wife for him, he had to send along lots of dowry, had to send along lots of good gifts and stuff to convince them to allow Rivka to come, and he has nothing. So the Medrash says, so why does he have nothing? Why is he left without? Why doesn't he have anything? So the Medrash quotes Rabbi Chanina Amar Godet Shalchai. Rabbi Chanina says they sent him without anything. And the reason they sent him without anything is because they were afraid if they'd start giving him things, that would get Esav even more angry. And Esav would try to kill him for taking stuff. Esav was already upset about the brachas that he took. If now when he left, he took along with him lots of riches, they were afraid that was going to go in and get Esav all riled up. Shuben Levi says, Shilach imai. That yes, actually Yaakov was sent with provisions. Yaakov was sent with gifts. Elo sha'amad Esav anat lemimenu. But Esav stood up and took them away. We're more familiar with the Medrash that says Eliphaz was sent to kill Yaakov, and Yaakov convinced Eliphaz not to kill him, but to take everything that he had. The Medrash's words here is Amar Esav anat lemimenu. It was Esav himself who took it away from him. But at the end of the day, Yaakov was left with nothing to take along to be able to convince them to allow him to marry a daughter from there. And therefore he expresses, May I in Yavai Ezri, from where will my help come from? Chazar va'amar, then Yaakov chazar, which means he changed his mind or he changed his thought, and he said, Ma ani mayvit sivri min bari? What am I, losing my hope? I'm losing my trust in my Creator? Chas v'shalom, las ana mayvit sivri min bari. I'm not going to lose my trust in my Creator. Ela Ezri me'im Hashem. My help comes from Hashem. The way the pasuk reads there in Tehillim is Esa en el haharim. I lift my eyes to the mountains. May I in Yavai Ezri. For where does my help come from? Ezri im Hashem oisei shemayim v'aretz. My help comes from Hashem, Creator of heaven and earth. So the Medrash is saying that this question that's posed, where is my help going to come from? And then there's a response, my help comes from Hashem. That was going on through Yaakov's mind. Yaakov was saying, May I in Yavai Ezri. Where will my help come from? I have no money. I have nothing here to convince them to allow me to marry one of their daughters. Then Yaakov says, wait a minute. What am I losing? My trust, my hope in Hashem? Ezri Hashem. Where is my help going to come from? It comes from Hashem. So Yaakov seems to have been going through some kind of at least a mental exercise of sorts, as to, you know, what's going to be. And Yaakov's first reaction is, I don't have anything. Eliezer came laden with riches. I have nothing. What am I going to do? Yaakov says, wait a minute, what am I going to do? Hashem is going to help me. What exactly was going... So that's what the Medrash says. So the Beis HaLevi explains what's going through Yaakov's mind in the following way. Many of the Mefarshim, it's interesting, they point out the word that's used is, you know, Yaakov says, where is my help going to come from? Then it says, Chazar va'omar. Chazar means he changed his mind and said. And that word Chazar, according to some commentaries, is a very problematic word. Because Chazar, to say Chazar, literally means he relented. Which would mean, at one point, Yaakov was really holding by, where is my help going to come from? Then Chazar means he changed, he relented from what he thought before, and he said, my help will come from Hashem. Which means at one point Yaakov is seriously not having trust in Hashem. Which the commentaries have a problem to say that Yaakov has a serious problem of trust in Hashem, and then he turns around, Chazar, then he relents from what he's saying, what he's thinking before, and coming on now to trust in Hashem. So therefore they take the word Chazar out. Others say, not to make such a big fuss about the word Chazar, and that basically the Medrash is describing the back and forth going on in Yaakov's mind. Yaakov says, where is my help going to come from? Then he responds to himself, it's going to come from Hashem. So it's not like Yaakov has this serious point of doubt at one point, and then he has to rethink his whole way of thinking and now come into trust in Hashem. It's something that goes through his mind in a sense where anytime people are faced with a challenge, they have this back and forth in their mind. Where is my help going to come from? It's going to come from Hashem. The Beis HaLevi explains what's going in Yaakov's mind in the following way. A person can sometimes be in a situation where they don't see a way how they're going to attain what they need. But they put their trust in Hashem and they say, Hashem will bring about the means that are necessary for this to happen. So if, for instance, a person needs money, and right now he doesn't have a way of getting it. So he says to himself, look, I put my trust in Hashem that either I'll find a good business deal to make, I'll find the money, someone will give me a gift. You know, you go through your mind about what will be that, so to speak, natural, normal means by which this is attained, although you don't seem to have that means with you, but you put your trust in Hashem, but Hashem will supply that means. He will bring about those means. But you're still focused on the fact that there has to be a certain means for this to come about, and you put your trust in Hashem, that Hashem will bring about that those means will come about. And there is nothing wrong with that. That is a level of trust in Hashem. The higher level is a level in which you say to yourself, even if we assume there's a normal means by which something has to happen, I don't need to think about what are the means that Hashem is going to bring it about. Even without those means, Hashem will make it happen. Yaakov first starts off with, look, I need money in order to be able to convince them to allow me to marry one of their daughters. That's what Eliezer did. That would really be the means of how this is accomplished. So Yaakov could say to himself, where are those means going to come from? Which means that he says to himself, really, he's not questioning as much as saying to himself that the Ribbono Shel Olam will make it happen, that the means will come about. If the means to convince them to marry one of the daughters is to have money, Hashem will bring about those means. He'll, as I'm here, I'll make a good business deal. As I'm here, I'll find money. Yaakov Avinu is going through his mind at first, what most of us go through our mind, as to how will Hashem bring it about. Not to say that Hashem won't bring it about, and they have their trust Hashem will bring it about. But the assumption is that he will bring it about by bringing about the usual means by how we attain this thing that we need to get to. The higher level but then Yaakov Avinu says, wait a minute, I'm losing my trust in the Creator? I need to be focused on a means for it to happen? Ezri Hashem, Hashem will bring about what I need, whether the means are there or not, whether the money's there or not. The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to can make it happen. I don't need to be figuring out what kind of means. I don't have to go ahead and assume that the norm that Hashem is going to bring about those normal means, because then the assumption is the normal means has to be there, but Hashem will make it happen. The higher level is, I don't need those means. If it's all in Hashem, those means don't have to be here. It could come about without those means. I just put my trust in Hashem. And we could argue that really, in Yaakov's sense, that's what happened. He didn't have any money, but he chanced upon the well, and he met Rachel, and he ended up working for Laban. One can argue that's not the typical means by which Laban would have agreed for Yaakov to marry her. But the Ribbono Shel Olam made it happen without the expected means that he should be able to find a wife. So that's how the Beis HaLevi learns. The Beis HaLevi learns that Yaakov is not struggling so much as really kind of going through his mind, first focusing on the expected means, because this is normally how it happens, and expecting that means Hashem will bring it about. And then he says, why do I have to think about means? Why do I have to think about the expected way that it's supposed to happen? I can just put my trust in Hashem that if He wants it to happen, it'll happen. There's a sefer that I've mentioned many times before. It's called Likutei Misefer Shem Yishmuel. It's selections from the Sefer Shem Yishmuel. It's not the whole sefer. It's selections from the sefer. And the Shem Yishmuel, when he talks about when Yaakov now thinks to himself and says, "Ezra miyam Hashem oisei shemayim v'aretz," he has a very interesting way of explaining what Yaakov now is thinking about when he says, "Ezra miyam Hashem, my help comes from Hashem." And the way that, again, this is an English, it's an English translation of this selections from Hashem Yishmuel, and I very much like the way they wrote it, so I'd like to read it to you from here to bring out this point that's made. Okay. Now, you could start off with a person putting his trust in Hashem in the sense of, I know that Hashem runs the world, I know my fate is not dependent on what I do, and a person who has true trust in Hashem, you know, doesn't make too many, as they call it here, complex calculations about how exactly everything is. You know, if a person is really feeling dependent on his ishtadlus, really dependent on his efforts, then he makes lots of calculations and budgets, and he's very, very much involved in figuring out to make sure that everything fits together and works out right with his finances. The person who has a higher level of trust in Hashem won't necessarily be negligent, but he may not be so heavily involved because he knows, you know, I do what I need to do, and the rest is Hashem's hands. But that person is still thinking, though, within a natural framework. Within a natural framework of things, he is still saying that I'm not going to be so focused on the natural framework, but the Ribbono Shel Olam will bring it about through the natural framework. Which, again, is a level of betachon and trust in Hashem, very similar to what we said before. There's nothing wrong with that. But then he says there's a higher level. And he writes like this: if we consider carefully, we will realize that within the natural order, we have only a very slight, if any, chance of success. We have so little power over our world, over our circumstances, health, and a plethora of other factors which control the nature of our lives. Meaning that in essence, you know, as much as we think there are certain things that when we engage in those things are the means, or even call them the normal means of how Hashem brings them about. But if you think about it, he says, even those means that we expect them to work, if we really thought about it, we would realize that we have so little influence and so little control over everything happening around us, that we would realize that really what we consider natural is really supernatural. Even when we succeed, and we go in and we say and we expect and we assume that the success came about because we engaged these things, he says if a person would really consider it carefully, he would look and see that even what would seem to have been a normal, natural way of attaining something, it's still a miracle because there are so many other factors and so many things that we're not in control of, that at the end of the day, there is nothing saying that anything should bring us success. As he says, we have so little power over our circumstances, health, and other factors that he says, our very existence is miraculous, and nothing we do truly has any effect on the world around us. A person with this level of understanding will not despair, however, but appreciate that while according to the natural order there is little hope, one can yearn and pray for the help and salvation of God in a supernatural context. Meaning, we're not talking about relying on miracles, but it means that if a person would truly consider what's going on, anything that we do should not necessarily work. It just shouldn't necessarily work. There's so many factors that we're not in control of that, you know, how many people engage in the same, two people can engage in the exact same thing. One is successful, one's not successful. Why? You don't know why. We have no control over it. And why one person is successful, why person is not successful, we don't even know. But at the end of the day, we should be considering that if that is so, that really anything that we engage in should never be expected to work. That under natural circumstances, you can't say, well, of course, naturally this should work. There's so many other things that can get in the way of it. And therefore, he says, essentially, what looks natural is really supernatural. And if you look at everything that way, then you don't fall into despair. Because when you realize that there's nothing in nature that truly can make the difference, then what does make the difference always? Hashem's miracles. That's what does it all the time. And a person, he says, the person on that level we said before, who is thinking within a natural framework, but putting his trust in Hashem, that Hashem will make things happen within that natural framework, actually faces a challenge. A person thinking within a natural framework can actually start really thinking that nature works. Right? Sometimes we realize it doesn't work. Sometimes we have our trust in Hashem. Sometimes we start putting our trust in nature. We start putting trust in our actions. It happens. That happens when because you're still thinking within a natural framework of things. But if you get out of that natural framework and you realize that the natural framework really doesn't do anything, and you truly believe that, then what are you going to fall back into? What are you going to slip back into? It's much harder to slip back into a natural framework when you've gotten yourself out of that framework. So the person who brings themselves to the higher level has less of a chance of slipping back into losing their trust in Hashem. Therefore, says the Shem Yishmuel, that with Yaakov going back and forth in his mind, Yaakov is starting off Ezri Mashem. Me'ayin Yavei Ezri. Where is my help going to come from? I have no money. I have the money. How am I going to convince them to go ahead and give me a wife? All right. Now, Yaakov, it's a thought that comes in Yaakov's mind. And Yaakov could respond to it, and maybe even right away, as the Beis Levi says, he's responding, well, there are Rabbanei Shel Olam, if you will get me the money. I'll get the money somehow. I put my trust in Hashem, he'll get me the money. Then Yaakov says, wait a minute, Ezri Mashem, my help comes from Hashem. Never, ever, does money really do it? Never does money do it. Never is there really a natural framework of things. Because within the natural framework, there's really nothing to say it should work. Even with the natural framework, there's so many other things out of our control that can mess it up. There's nothing that says with the natural framework it should be working. So it's always Hashem. So if it's always Hashem, I don't have anything to worry about. I have nothing to be concerned about. If my thought pattern is that Hashem will, I need the money and Hashem will get me the money, okay, that's the level. It's not the highest level. But the higher level of Ezri Mashem, my help comes from Hashem, is a level in which, similar to the way the Beis HaLevi says, but the Beis HaLevi says that, you know, don't even think about the means. The Shem Yishmuel is saying it as, don't think about the means because you brought yourself to a level that you know the means really, really never make, can never really make a difference. That the natural framework of things never really works. It's not really deciding at all. There's no reason why the natural framework should work because there's so many other factors in that framework that should say it doesn't work. So therefore, everything is always Hashem's miracle. That's Ezri Mashem. My help comes from Hashem. If I'm wondering at some point, how am I going to do this because I don't have the money to be able to convince them to allow me to marry one of their wives, and that is how Eliezer got them to, that was what Eliezer did to get them to let Rivka go, and I don't have that, And if I don't have that, how is that going to work? The response is not, Hashem will get me the money. The response is, Hashem will help, because it's always Hashem. It's always Hashem. Because even the natural way of things, the expected way of things, the way that it seems to work, there's no reason other than the natural framework that it should really work. So it's always a miracle. If it's always a miracle, my help is from Hashem. Nothing to worry about. Okay. That's this medrash.
I always like the sentence that is, in fact, repeated, I think, in several parshas, and he lifted his eyes.
Right.
And it's almost like, and here it is. Here's the miracle.
Okay. All right. Let's now, read on, again, on page 144. This is going to be Pasuk Yud Aleph. Second pasuk of the parsha. Vayivka b'mokayim vayolen sham kivah hashemesh. He came to the place and he slept there because the sun had set. Vayikach me'avnei ha'mokayim, and he took from the stones of the place. Vayasim merash ha'isav, and he put them around his head. Vayishka b'mokayim ahu, and he went to sleep in that place. Okay? So it says he took from the stones of the place. Stones, plural. If you look a little further on, after Yaakov has the dream, and he gets up. The pasuk says, look on page 146, pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. Vayashkem Yaakov Abayker, Yaakov got up in the morning, Vayikaches Ha'evin Ashasam Rashi Sav. And he took the stone that he put at his head. First it was called stones, and now it's called stone. So Rashi brings a famous medrash. Yaakov set up the stones around his head. Each one said, they want the tzaddik to lie on it, and they all came into one, so they all had a chance to serve Yaakov. That's Rashi's explanation. I'm going to share you a medrash that brings the same idea, but with a different background. And the medrash says, Omar, Yaakov Avinu exclaimed, Yudbeis Avonim Notal, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yudah Omar, Yudbeis Avonim Notal, Yaakov took 12 stones. Doesn't say how many stones in the pasuk. He took 12 stones. Omar, kach gazar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shumayim et yud beishvatim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decreed that he will establish 12 tribes. This was something that they knew. This was a tradition that they had. That the Jewish people, the foundation of the Jewish people will be 12 tribes. Avram lo yamidan. Avraham did not establish them. Yitzchak lo yamidan. Yitzchak didn't establish them. Ani, regarding me, if these 12 stones combine into one, I will then know that I am the one who is going to establish the 12 tribes. Once the 12 stones did come together, he knew that he would be the one establishing the 12 tribes. So according to this medrash, Yaakov did a test. He took 12 stones, representing the 12 tribes, and he made a test. If these 12 stones combine as one, then I know that I will be the father of the 12 tribes. I will be establishing those 12 tribes. I will be establishing those 12 pillars of the beginning of the Jewish people. If it doesn't happen, then I'm just like Avraham, just like Yitzchak. I'm not going to be the one. And looking at this, I'm a bit reminded about some of the Mefarshim later on, talking about the strife between Yosef and his brothers, in which the brothers think that Yosef wants to be the one to establish 12 tribes. He wants to push them out. They're not the 12 tribes, and Yosef is going to be the one that establishes the 12 tribes. That's what they thought Yosef was trying to do. Because you see, you know, Avraham didn't do it, and Yitzchak didn't do it. The Medrash says Yaakov is making a test to see if he'd be the one to do it. And I do believe that some of the Mefarshim learn that definitely learned that Yosef wanted to push them out. And I think they also say, and Yosef would be the one to make the 12 tribes. Yosef was meant to be a tribe. They thought Yosef wanted to be the father of the 12 tribes. Okay. Now, very interesting medrash about how Yaakov Avinu is measuring as to whether or trying to figure out testing if he will be the father of the 12 tribes. And the test of that is, will they all unite together? Which means Yaakov knows that the 12 tribes that will create the Jewish people aren't 12 separate pillars, aren't 12 separate tribes. They're 12 tribes in the sense that each one has its own personality, each one has its own character, but they have to come together as one unit. They have to come together as one nation. And therefore, Yaakov says, well, if the 12 stones come together by me, then I know that I will be the father of the 12 tribes. Now, if those 12 tribes are to come together, how do 12 distinct peoples, what allows them to unite together? What makes them unite together? The answer is, says the Shem Yishmuel, if they all subjugate themselves to the will of Hashem, each one understanding that each one has its own part, but each one has its own part in serving Hashem, and all together we have to come to serve Hashem, that's what unites them. The idea of each one of them subjecting themselves, number one, to helping each other, number one, subjecting themselves to the will of Hashem, that's the common denominator. That is then also helps them unite together as a people in the sense of interacting with one another. But if they have that subjugation to the will of Hashem as their uniting force, then they can unite. Says the Shem Yishmuel, a very interesting insight. As the Medrash says, Yaakov says, Avram didn't make 12, Yitzchak didn't make 12. How are we to understand that? How should we understand that Avraham couldn't make 12 tribes and Yitzchak couldn't make 12 tribes? Why couldn't Avram be the one to make the 12 tribes? Why'd have to come down to Yaakov? Says the Shem Yishmuel, because again, the 12 tribes have to be able to unite as one. Avraham had a Yishmael. Yitzchak had an Esav. And as much as when you learn the parshiyos of Esav especially, and they talk about how Yitzchak wanted Esav to have a share in things, but Esav was different. There's not a question. No one has a question. Esav was different. No one has a question. Yishmael was different. The question is, would they be different but still control themselves to serve Hashem? And they didn't. But at the end of the day, no matter what, they weren't the same as their brothers. Yishmael wasn't Yitzchak, and Esav wasn't Yaakov. And therefore, right there, you have the inability for the unity. You have the inability for the kind of unity that's needed to create the unit of the 12 tribes. That unity was immediately broken or unable to come about once Avraham had Yishmael. Yitzchak and Yishmael couldn't subjugate themselves together to the will of Hashem in the same way to make that kind of unity necessary. Yaakov and Esav couldn't subjugate themselves to the will of Hashem in the same way to unite. And therefore, if Avraham has more kids, he has 12 more kids. Yitzchak has 12 more kids, or 11 more kids, okay? It's not going to help. Because you can't just go, apparently, because you can't just, you know, you can't just ignore Yishmael, you can't just ignore Esav. Why not? I'm not sure, but you can't. He's saying you can't. You can't just ignore them. Yeah, eventually they were, we know that. Yitzchak was told, Hashem said to Avram, "Ki b'Yitzchak lachazara, Yitzchak is your children." But again, that was only to be able to continue the chain, eventually get to the 12 tribes. But to create the 12 tribes, the 12 tribes had to be that all the children of that father would be able to unite. And they would all unite, subjugating themselves to the will of Hashem. And the way I understand it is, what the Shem Yishmuel is saying is that Yishmael couldn't do that with Yitzchak, and Yaisim couldn't do that with Yaakov. And there are commentaries that talk about, I believe, that, you know, the fact that Avraham had a Yishmael, we have to see that as part of the cleansing process. Yishmael was, so to speak, level one of removing, purging from Avraham the negative influences that he started off with. And then the next stage of purification came when Yitzchak had Esav. Yaakov was pure. Yaakov was already that pure, that purest form that he could have the 12 tribes. And again, is it possible? Does that mean Esav had no choice about whether he could be better than he was? He had a choice to be better than he was. But again, at the same, and it could be that he could have been some kind of a partner with Yaakov. It could be Yishmael could have been some kind of a partner with Esav, with Yitzchak. But that didn't happen. But even if it didn't, that didn't happen from their point. But to start with, they both were born, the way they were born was because that was part of the purging process of bringing about Yaakov, who was considered the Bechir Sheba Avos, the choicest of the forefathers, because he was already born pure. The kind of spiritual impurity that Avraham had from his beginnings, which carried on to Yitzchak. They had to come out and be purged from them by having a Yishmael and having an Esav, and then Yaakov was a purist. But because Yitzchak and because Avraham had a Yishmael, Yitzchak had an Esav, they could not be the progenitors of the 12 tribes because they couldn't have all their children being unified as one in the service of Hashem. And therefore, they couldn't be the fathers of the 12 tribes. Yaakov already was on the level that he could. Yaakov made a test. Will he be the one? What was the test? The 12 stones. If they become one, they become one stone, they can come to that wholeness, that shlemus, that completeness, like 12 stones turning into one. If that's what happens with these stones, that means he's going to be the one that can have the 12 children that can form that highest form of completeness and unity in the service of Hashem.
Is there any sense that Yaakov, in the same way a parent sort of can shape those 12 kids, that Yaakov is shaping these stones in any way, or it's just he puts them together and they do?
That's an interesting thought. I don't know of anything like that, but that's an interesting point. Okay. Now, let's move on. And as we know, Yaakov has a dream about the ladder. He eventually makes it to Charan. He meets up with Rachel. And he wants to marry Rachel. And Laban switches Leah for Rachel. And then eventually also marries Rachel. Leah has the first four children. And Rachel does not. So Rachel approaches Yaakov. And this is, we'll start on page 152, Pasuk Lamed. Vatera Rachel ki lo yoda li Yaakov. Rachel saw she did not give birth to Yaakov. Vatkani Rachel ba'achaysa. Rachel was jealous with her sister. Vatema el Yaakov havali banim. She said to Yaakov, give me children, v'ma'ayin mei sanoichi, otherwise I'm like dead. Vayichraaf Yaakov b'Rachel. Yaakov became angry with Rachel. Vayimani said, Asachas elokim anoichi, am I in place of God, Hashemani meich pribatin, that is held back from you children? Vatema she said, Hinei amasi bilha boy eleha. Behold, my maidservant Bilha, boy eleha, consort with her, v'seilet al berkai, and she shall give birth on my knees, meaning I will raise the child, v'ibonegam anoichi mimena, and I shall build up through her. She gave Bilha her maid servant as a wife to Yaakov. Yaakov lived with her. Bilha conceived, she gave birth to a son to Yaakov. Rachel said, God has judged me, he has also listened to my voice. And he's given me a son. And therefore she called his name Dan. So I'm going to share with you a very interesting thought from the Sefornu. On these words, Vayiten li bein. So Rachel is saying, basically, that Rachel knows, she didn't give birth to this child, but she is within the power of saying that giving me a son means that she's going to raise the son. Which means that, my way I understand it is that, Rachel raised her children, Leah raised her children, okay? Bilha, who was the maidservant of Rachel, and Zilpah was the maidservant of Leah, they were the biological mothers. I'm sure they weren't just thrown out of the picture. But for their children, Rachel and Leah had a very strong influence. They were the ones really in charge in raising them. I'm sure Bilha and Zilpah were involved too. But it was really, in a sense, to a certain way of Rachel adopts her maidservant's children, Leah adopts her maidservant's children, and they are meant to be seen as regular children. The Sefornu says on the words, Vayitan li bein, he has given me a son. Those are very powerful words, according to Sefornu. They have very strong meaning. If Rachel is calling this a son, right? And again, it's not a biological son, but she's calling him a son. The point is, she's calling him a son, says the Sephornu, and she's not calling him a slave. Because, says the Sephornu, imagine if when Rachel gives Bilhah to Yaakov, and Bilhah is still Rachel's maidservant. She's still her slave. So, interestingly, the Sephornu support approaches this from a halachic point, which he does in many places, and he says, you know, the child of a slave, like, let's say a man, right, a regular Jewish man who's not supposed to marry a slave, but he has a child with a slave. What status does the child have? The child's a slave. It's not his son. It's not halachically his son. That child is halachically a slave. A slave is not Jewish, not a Gentile, but he's a slave. It's not halachically his son. If Rachel, even in an adoptive form, wants to call Dan a son, says the Sephornu, that means that before she gave Bilhah to Yaakov to marry, she freed her. She freed her. So that now when Yaakov marries Bilhah, he's really married to her. And the child from Bilhah is really his child. And therefore, says the Sephornu, because of that, that's why Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher, who were the children of the maidservants, that's why they are the children of Yaakov. They're one of the Shvatim. Their names are on the Choshen. Their names are on the breastplate that the Kohen Gadol wears as a remembrance before Hashem of the Jewish people. They're there. If they would be slaves, they wouldn't be there. They're there because they're not slaves. They're Yaakov's children. Why are they Yaakov's children? Because Rachel freed Bilhah and Leah freed Zilpah. If they wouldn't have freed them, they would have been slaves. And they wouldn't have been Yaakov's children. But now that he freed them, now that they freed them, Rachel freed Bilhah and Leah freed Zilpah, so now they are Yaakov's children. And they can be called, and Rachel can call Dan a bain, a son, not a slave, a son. Then, not a biological son, but an adoptive son. She's going to raise him as Yaakov's son. Unlike Yishmael, says the Sephornu, that it's clear that after Hagar gave birth to Yishmael, Hagar was still the maidservant of Sarah. Which is very interesting, the way that Sephornu is saying it. That's why, says Sephornu, Hashem says to Avram, Ki be Yitzchak kar lechazara. Yitzchak is your children. Because Yishmael is a slave. Because after, what happens? Hagar marries Sarah, and then the first time already she's acting up. And what does Avram say to Sarah? Here is your maidservant in your hand. Do with her what you want. He calls her a maidservant. Even though it's interesting, I think the word shvachas, maidservants, it comes up later in the Torah also. But the Sephornu says that Yaakov says to Sarah, here's your maidservant. Do what you feel. Because even when she married, Hagar married Avraham, Hagar was not freed. So Yishmael always had a status of a slave. And therefore he couldn't be the continuation of Avraham. Because he didn't have that same yichas to him. He didn't have that same genealogical, if that's the word, connection. Didn't have that same lineage to Avraham. You can't say there was no lineage, but it didn't have the same lineage because it's a slave. That's the Sephornu says. Very interesting. The Sephornu is telling us that the reason why the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, the reason why they can be the Shvatim, is because before their mother married Yaakov, they were freed. And therefore they are halachically the full-fledged children of Yaakov. And therefore they can have the full kedusha that Yaakov passes on to his children. But Rachel adopted them, right? Rachel was the one who raised them. That's what it means. That's what it says about Hela Libain. She's raising them. Leah's raising them. But they're raising them as a son, or as if there is a son. In order to be able to say they're raising a son, Hashem has given me a son, that has to mean that he's not a slave. And that's the inherent difference, the essential difference between the children of Bilhah and Zilpah and Yishmael, the child of Hagar. Now, as the parasha goes on, so we have how, you know, so after Rachel goes ahead and gives Bilhah as a wife to Yaakov, and then afterwards Leah gives Zilpah to Yaakov. So then again, on page 154, we have the story of Reuven and the Dudoyim. Pasuk Yudalad. Vayelech Reuven mekitzir chitim. Reuven went during the harvest of the wheat. Vayimtza Dudoyim basade. He found this flower. Dudoyim. He found Dudoyim. How do they explain Dudoyim? All right, so an article calls them Dudoyim. I was looking somewhere else, and I can't remember how they translated it.
Mandrakes?
Mandrakes, thank you. Okay. He found these mandrakes in the field. He brought them to Leah, his mother. Give me from some of those mandrakes. There was a belief that these mandrakes help fertility. Leah says to her, isn't it enough that you took my husband? You also want to take my mandrakes? We're not going to focus exactly what Leah meant to say. Rachel then said, therefore, he shall lay with you tonight, tachis do'ei b'neich, in place of the d'doim of your son. Yaakov came from the field in the evening, but Leah went out to greet him. She said, you'll come to me, because I have, so to speak, I have paid my wages for you. But do'ei b'neich, through the d'doim of my son, and he laid with her that night. So here again, I want to share with you the Sefornu. The Sefornu on this pasuk, and he is explaining when Leah said, basically, I have clearly hired you. I've hired you. So the Sefornu says like this. That first part, she says to him, I have hired you. So her point is to say to him is that basically, I mean, he was supposed to go to Rachel, which means it was really Rachel's right for Yaakov to be with her that night. He really was obligated to be with her. Leah said, look, because of my Dedoyim, she agreed. So you're not wronging her. Then says the Sefernu, Ubazah Sipur Hanira Maguna Eitzel Megali Panamatera. By those who like to be critical, you know, the Bible critics like to be critical of what goes on in the Torah, and they see this kind of a story with Leah coming to Yaakov and saying, I hired you because I paid for you with these flowers, by giving these flowers to my wife. It says for those who try to misinterpret the Torah, this is perfect for them, right? They love this stuff. To go in and say, look, you know, they're fighting over this guy and they fight and she pays for him. You know, for them this is what they use to interpret the Torah in the wrong way. Says the Sefornu, we have to look at this in the following way. What's actually happening here with this story is actually showing us that the whole idea of procreating by Yaakov and by Rachel and by Leah was the same focus and intent that Adam and Chava had before their sin. The intention was not self-gratification. Their intention was solely to have children in the honor of their creator and to service and to serve him. Meaning, actually, if I understand this word correctly, when Leah says to Yaakov, I have hired you, which sounds so coarse, it's not coarse, because what's happening here is the sole intent of why Leah wants to be with Yaakov and Rachel wants to be with Yaakov, it's nothing about self-gratification. It's all about serving Hashem. It's all about having children, creating children who will serve Hashem. That's what it's all about. And if that's what it's all about, then when Leah says, I've hired you, right, it's not meant to be in a coarse way. It's really about saying, I have the mitzvah now. I got the mitzvah. You want to know how I got the mitzvah? You're supposed to be doing the mitzvah with Rachel? Well, it's because I gave Rachel from the Didoyim. And therefore, I now have the mitzvah. If you look at it in that context, it's a whole different way of looking at it. We're not trying to buy pleasure here. No one's trying to buy pleasure here. No one's trying to buy someone's love. But rather, it's about explaining the situation. Everybody's intention here is solely pure and solely of holiness, only of pure holiness. And therefore, Leah approaches Yaakov and explains to him why he will be with her tonight instead of being with Rachel. It's not about buying anything. It's about basically explaining why I have the mitzvah tonight when Rachel should have had the mitzvah. And then he says, Vahidia. And what's also being told here is, being that our matriarch's intent here was accepted and pleasurable by Hashem, regarding their efforts of bringing in another wife and the whole issue with the flowers, nishmat filasan al zeh, their prayers were heard with this. It's about for the tzaddik to do the natural intervention, the natural involvement that's possible by him to attain what he wants. And with that, he will pray that they should be able to get to the goal they want to get to. As our sages say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires the prayers of the tzaddikim. What's happening here, says the Sfornu, is besides showing us, the first point is that we have to see from here that the intention of Rachel Aleiha here was purely l'shem shemayim, purely for the sake of heaven. And therefore, their means by which they were trying to have more children, and we see the Torah talks about it, and the Torah Hashem accepted it, shows that their intention, what they were doing here, was pure. And it was the right thing to do, because a tzaddik, even a tzaddik, has to, says the Sefornu, put in whatever hishtadlus, whatever natural effort that he can, he has to put it in, together with davening. You don't just daven. Together with davening goes that hishtadlus, goes those efforts, goes that natural intervention. They have to do what they need to do to get it done. So what did they do? They brought in another wife. The whole story with the flowers and help with fertility, right? They did that, and there was nothing wrong with it. And if the Torah is recording it, it's recording it because it was the right thing to do. And number one, if to be the right thing to do, it meant that they had to have the proper intent as to why they were doing it. And they did have the proper intent, because their intent in procreation was like the same intent that Adam and Chava had before the sin of before their sin. So therefore, whatever they did that was involved in this was done with the purest of intent, and that was accepted together with their prayer, because together with prayer has to go the ishtadlus. Together with prayer has to go the efforts and the natural intervention. Even a tzaddik has to do that. But with the tzaddik, but the intervention that a tzaddik uses has to be an intervention with the proper kavanah, with the proper intent. You got to be doing it with proper intent. If intent is not the proper intent, it's the wrong intent, then those efforts don't work. But the number one is, if the Torah is recording these things, which kind of look kind of coarse and kind of, why are they doing all these things? They're doing all these things because even with your prayer, you have to put in effort, the natural efforts. You have to put it in. And if those natural efforts were done correctly, then that's where the Torah records it and says that it works. So therefore, the Sefurna was telling us that this whole episode with the flowers and bringing in the other wives, which, you know, it's kind of hard to understand exactly what's going on here. It seems like you have these women who are just fighting over being able to have children and fighting over the husband. That's not what's happening here. That's not what's happening. If the Torah is recording it, that means it was the right thing to do and done in the right way. And even when Leah goes over to Yaakov and says, I've hired you, she doesn't mean it in a coarse way. She's trying to say that I have the mitzvah because, basically, for giving the gedolim to my wife, to my sister, I now, basically for that, I now have the right to do the mitzvah with you. And that's the whole intent. And because that was their intent, and they put in effort they needed to, and they davened, their prayers were answered. So it's a very interesting insight as to how to look at this entire episode.
Thank you, Rabbi.
The two of you come together, right? You could tie this whole thing with Bilhah and Zilpah back and say that Jacob and his wives figured out something that Abraham and